any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Well, howdy, howdy, howdy. Hey, this is Mitch. Jim, you there? Well, okay. I'm trying to get Jim hooked up here. I guess he's with Danny.
Here's Jim.
Here we go. Be ready. Roll, Jim.
Putting in progress.
Well, this is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal, where I'm very pleased to have today as my special featured guest, Danny Saris. If we get there, I'm going to review the major stories of the day, which are very serious and disturbing, including the Ottawa police chief has admitted at the city council live stream that the mayor and his staff were responsible for getting the GoFundMe program shut down. How outrageous is that? Meanwhile, the Ottawa police are seizing all fuel and propane tanks from the Freedom Convoy trucks, cutting off the supply route for protesters. Can you imagine in the freezing weather there in Ottawa, Canada, depriving them of fuel and propane? This is an act of cruelty. That fuel, by the way, does not belong to the government. That belongs to the truckers. This is a form of theft. Ottawa Mayor Jim Watson, whom I regard as a scoundrel, declared a state of emergency Sunday due to the ongoing Freedom Convoy demonstration. It began in Vancouver more than a week ago, 43 miles long, reached Ottawa last Friday night. Heavily armed Ottawa police officers removed all fuel and propane tanks after the mayor declared a state of emergency. No arrests were made during the fuel seizure, but this is completely outrageous. A CBC reporter, that's Canadian Broadcast Company, posted video of Ottawa police seizing the fuel and the propane tanks from the trucks parked at the logistics tank. This is completely outrageous. They're punishing them. This is the equivalent, in my opinion, of putting someone in solitary confinement. Ottawa police left with the fuel but did not dismantle the camp. They cut off the supply route for protesters downtown. Witnesses said before the police drayed, they had seen a drone fly overhead surveilling them, no doubt sizing up the situation to see how they could do it. I have some video here, which you'll not be able to see, but I'm going to play a bit of it about the police actually performing these despicable actions. The cops are surrounded by protesters, not in large numbers.
In fact, yes, they are taking fuel right away from people as they attempt to fuel their vehicles. And people are surrounding the police, even though the police are actually being extremely calm and cool about kind of everything, except for they're taking fuel, I guess. But other than that, they're being pretty respectful to everyone, considering they just got surrounded in like 2 seconds.
Good evening. I'm Danny Bulford. I was a member of the RCMP for 15 years. The last 8 was spent here on a full-time tactical unit. where I spent the majority of my time protecting our prime minister and conducting other tactical operations. I know what a lawful arrest looks like. We know of people being arrested for helping to fuel trucks. For what offense is still unclear. Please remain calm. This is a scare tactic to coerce people into submission. They don't have a legal leg to stand on. The world is watching, and this reflects very poorly on the city of Ottawa and the police services. Remain peaceful. The only thing that you are required to say if you're arrested or detained is to identify yourself. Every Canadian citizen has the right to equal protection under the law. Hold the line.
So here the officers have come in and started to steal the fuel that the volunteers hopefully have been bringing in. There's their first attempt. Now our move.
I find it very difficult to imagine under these circumstances that this situation could remain non-violent. A research colleague of mine with extensive connections with the intel community suggests they may bring in the bad guys, may bring in snipers to start shooting some of the truckers or alternatively some of the police. I cannot believe the police are sympathetic. When it previously happened that they called in the tow truck drivers joined the protest. On my blog, you can find a report about the role of GoFundMe, which has been disgraceful, now saying all donations to the trucker convoy will be automatically refunded as Florida is going to investigate. I added the following note. Calling out the blatant theft of funds from donors to the truckers' protests has led GoFundMe to reverse course and now declare it will automatically refund those donations, but they have exposed their hand as grotesquely corrupt and politically biased. I have added the truckers' declaration just published by State of the Nation here. The GoFundMe fundraising platform said on February 5th it will automatically refund donations made to a trucker convoy in Canada protesting COVID-19 vaccine mandates after a backlash. GoFundMe said Friday it was preventing the funds from going to the organizers of the Freedom Convoy and would instead send the money to established charities verified by GoFundMe. The justification for the unusual move? We now have evidence from law enforcement that a previously peaceful demonstration has become an occupation, with police reports of violence and other lawful activity, GoFundMe said, which, by the way, appears to be completely false. And as we now know, GoFundMe is even lying about it because the directive came from the city council and the mayor, as the chief of police has now acknowledged. The website didn't provide any evidence of the alleged violence or unlawful activity. No doubt I had, because there was none. John Carpe, president of Justice Center for Constitutional Freedom, a legal group representing the convoy organizers, said the fundraising company has no credibility without making the evidence public. Organizers told a briefing that police were using measures typically utilized by oppressive regimes to try to take away the truckers' right of peaceful assembly and freedom of expression, and media reports and officials were falsely linking crimes committed by outsiders with the protesters. Here's a trucker's declaration, which I regard as impeccable. We, the truckers of America, declare that whereas the killer virus is a mild flu, the COVID vaccine is a gene modification treatment, harmful, often deadly, and damaging to the immune system. The COVID vaccine is unnecessary because cheap, effective remedies exist. Administering these dangerous experimental jabs to children is especially evil and violates the Nuremberg Code of 1947. The PCR test is totally fraudulent and can't differentiate between COVID-19 and the seasonal flu. As the CDC and WHO now admit after 2 years, The tests mostly give false positives and were rigged to do so. The PCR swabs are invasive, potentially damaged to the olfactory nerve, and contain toxic substances. The case data generated is meaningless junk, as the authorities now admit. The masks are totally useless, increase the risk of disease, and can damage children's brains by cutting off the supply of oxygen. The vaccine mandates are illegal, unconstitutional, and violate our fundamental human rights and the Nuremberg Code of 1947. The vaccine passports are illegal, unconstitutional, discriminatory, go against science, and violate the Nuremberg Code. The news media is the PR agency of Big Pharma, purveying disinformation and lies about this pandemic 24/7. The fact checkers are the paid mouthpieces of Big Pharma, disseminating untruth and misinformation. We hereby declare that we are not leaving this city until our demands are met as follows. No more mandates. No more gene-based vaccines. No more bogus diagnostic tests. No more masks. No more health passports. No more censorship by the lying news media and social media. All the scientific findings by truth-telling doctors and researchers must be fully presented to the public. Full compensation by the vaccine manufacturers and Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation to every person injured by the COVID-19 vaccines or their bereaved families. Our demonstration is totally peaceful and lawful. If any disturbance occurred, it is the result of FBI dirty tricks, as occurred at the so-called Capitol riot of January 6, 2021. It's time to end this scamdemic. In its update on Saturday, GoFundMe, which has not responded to requests for comments, claimed it had already enabled donors to get a refund, and only the remaining funds would have been distributed to charities. However, quote, due to donor feedback, we are simplifying the process. We will automatically refund all contributions directly. Donors do not need to submit a request. You can expect to see a refund within 7 to 10 business days, the company said. GoFundMe's actions have drawn scrutiny, particularly in light of the platform allowing campaigns for people linked to violence before. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, Republican, said it was a fraud for GoFundMe to commandeer $9 million, actually $10 million, in donations sent to support truckers and give it to causes of their own choosing. I agree 100%. DeSantis said he'll work with Florida's Attorney General Ashley Moody to investigate these deceptive practices. These donors should be given a refund. Representative Jim Jordan from Ohio, the top Republican on the House Judiciary Committee, also indicated the panel may probe what unfolded. GoFundMe promoted the Antifa-occupied CHOP zone in Seattle, but they shut down fundraisers for truckers protesting COVID mandates. We've got questions, he wrote on Twitter, referring to the autonomous zone known as the Capitol Hill Organized Project that was shut down in Washington in Seattle in 2020 after several shootings. Convoy organizers have recently turned to Give, Send, Go. A GoFundMe competitor raised money. Give, Send, Go was down Saturday due to bot cyber attacks, a spokeswoman told the Epoch Times. She said the company was working as fast and hard as we can to restore the website, as well they should. Meanwhile, in related developments, conservatives elect Candace Bergen, not the actress, Canadian politician, as interim party leader. Manitoba MP Candace Bergen has been elected as the interim leader of the Conservative Party after the removal of Erin O'Toole. In a secret caucus vote on Wednesday, Conservative MPs gave the nod to Bergen to replace O'Toole after months of infighting severely weakened his hold over the party. Bergen, who is deputy leader of the Conservatives under O'Toole, has represented the riding of Portage-Luger since 2008 and was opposition House leader from 2016 to 2020. 9 candidates were in the running for the interim position. Scott Reed, MP, the chair of the National Conservative Caucus, observed in a statement. The selection of Bergen came hours after O'Toole was ousted from the leadership role, with 73 MPs voting to remove him, just 45 lining up in his support. The vote was called after 35 MPs signed a petition to put his leadership to the test. In a recorded statement posted to social media Wednesday, O'Toole said that he accepted the results, but he had some parting comments about the direction of the party he would no longer lead. This country needs a conservative party that is both an intellectual force and a governing force. Ideology without power is vanity. Seeking power without ideology is hubris. Meanwhile, Pierre Trudeau, the Justin Trudeau, the PM, thanked O'Toole for his service after the vote had taken place. Remarkably, I have a photograph comparison of Justin Trudeau with the earlier Justin Trudeau, and it's pretty apparent these are not the same person. I've reported to you how Hillary Clinton has used 6 or 8 different body doubles, even including internationally televised debates with Donald Trump and with Bernie Sanders. That's shocking enough. Then during the first debate, I noticed that the fellow who was debating Donald Trump did not appear to be the real Joe, who is from Delaware. That his ears looked different, shape and size of his skull appeared different. James Woods, the actor, noted that his eye color had changed from blue to brown. Now we've had further confirmation. The handwriting's completely different. My observation about the skull has been confirmed. The real Joe has a broader, thicker skull. This new guy, a narrower, thinner skull. It's all outrageous. And it also appears now that they replaced Justin Trudeau. Absolutely stunning. O'Toole is the first party leader to be removed under a process outlined in the Reform Act, legislation passed in 2017 that allows a caucus to give members the power to trigger a leadership review. Anger against his leadership has been simmering for months, sparked by September's disappointing election results. The conservatives lost ground in crucial regions of the country compared to 2019's election loss. Bergen will serve as the interim conservative leader until a new permanent leader is chosen by the party. This will be the third leadership race, and former PM Joseph Harper stepped down after losing to the Liberals in the 2015 election. Candace Bergen has taken over leadership in Canada's Conservative Party, and she's coming for Trudeau. This could be very serious. Meanwhile, the legal aspects of what's going on in Canada turned out to be completely the opposite of one might have supposed if you thought the law was on the side of the government and the mayor of Ottawa. Here's a new piece. The damning court case Trudeau doesn't want anyone talking about, including a video. Smearing your critics when you get in trouble is hardly an innovative political tactic for either party. But today's left is charting new territory and how brazenly they can make the attempt. Trudeau is frantic because the law is not on his side. He wants protesters to crack before the case that proves they are 100% in defending their charter rights goes to court. The eyes of the world have turned toward the trucker protest on Trudeau's doorstep while authorities try to shut it down before the clock runs out on Trudeau's COVID isolation excuse for lying low. With greater urgency and truckers showing no sign of leaving, the local mayor has declared a state of emergency. Authorities have determined it an unlawful occupation. And any local citizen who gives help, even if it's just a gallon of gas or diesel to the protesters, will be criminally charged for helping them. The January 6th criminalized assent strategy has shown itself so effective that Canada seems to be taking a page out of the playbook. It's not just Pelosi's Democrats Trudeau is copying, it's Tsai's suppression of dissidents. That puts a whole new spin on Trudeau's 2014 quote of admiring China's basic dictatorship. That political instinct to wield authority over the public, together with his statement he made in September of 2020, was an enormous red flag for anyone paying attention. There's a video, coronavirus. Trudeau tells UN conference that pandemic provides opportunity for a reset, showing clearly he's a member of the club, the World Economic Forum, that wants to introduce one world government with following a massive depopulation genocidal agenda. His administration was also busted for using military resources to perform psyops on Canadian civilians to achieve COVID compliance. The plan devised by the Canadian Joint Operations Command, also known as CJOC, relied on propaganda techniques similar to those employed during the Afghanistan war. The campaign called for shaping and exploiting information. CJOC claimed the information operation scheme was needed to head off civil disobedience by Canadians during the coronavirus pandemic and to bolster government messages about it. A separate initiative, not to link to the CJOC plan, but overseen by Canadian forces intelligence officers, called information from public social media accounts in Ontario. Data was also compiled on peaceful Black Lives Matter gatherings and BLM leaders. Senior military officers claimed that information was needed to ensure the success of Operation Laser, the Canadian Forces' mission to help out in long-term care homes hit by COVID-19 and to aid in the distribution of vaccines in some northern community, published in Ottawa Citizen. Justin is weaponizing the government against working class citizens who united around the wrong cause. This late in the game, we know a lot more about the China virus than we did early on. Also, the current strain behaves quite differently than the one that had people so frightened in the initial stages. The jab hasn't provided the silver bullet protection from infection or transmission we had hoped, and natural immunity is being grossly neglected in any policy conversation. Remember, that massive number of people who got COVID, assuming they actually had COVID but survived, have natural antibody protection, which is overwhelmingly better, stronger, more robust, and enduring than that you could acquire from a bona fide vaccine, of which these are not. The very same blue-collar essential workers who were hailed as COVID heroes 2 short years ago are being denounced, slandered, and hit with ultimatums by the privileged government official who hid at home and conducted business over Zoom calls. We know the law is not on his side. Here's how. Imagine for a moment that John Quincy Adams did something so egregiously unconstitutional that James Madison took him to court over the violation. That's basically what's happening in Canada. Since Canada's 1967 independence was negotiated rather than the result of a revolutionary war, the document on which Canada's rules were based was originally one ratified by the British. It wasn't until the Reagan administration that Canada got around to rewriting and amending its founding document as speaking with a more narrowly Canadian voice. The process required ratification by the leaders of the provinces, as well as the prime minister of the day, Justin's dad, Pierre Elliott Trudeau, a real piece of work in his own right. Of the leaders to sign the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms back in 1982, only one signatory remains alive today. After careful deliberation, that man just took Trudeau, Justin, to court for massive violations of that founding document with heavy-handed COVID regulations that totally ran roughshod over the charter rights of Canadian citizens. The bought and paid for Canadian media won't touch this story with a 10-foot pole. But Jordan Peterson himself did us a favor of interviewing former Premier Brian Peckford so that media could not silence him. Why would an American audience watch this? Because there is cross-border application both in understanding the lawless tactics being applied by the left here and the reasonable response by those defending the integrity of our founding documents. The guy who wrote the freaking founding document says Trudeau has been violating Canadian charter rights all over the place. That means the truckers are justified in their protest against the egregious rights violations suffered at the hand of their own government. What is Trudeau's response? With a complicit media's assistance, his response is to further infringe the rights of those protesters to peacefully assemble in protest. Now, here, I'm going to play a part of the interview, and hopefully...
Mr. Beckford and I have been...
Hopefully you'll be able to hear it. Listen to this.
...talking over the last week, as I mentioned, because he has serious concerns about the policies of the current Canadian government in relationship to the Canadian Charter of Rights, which was established as part of the Constitution Act in the 1980s. And he, as I said in the bio, is the only living minister who participated in that constitutional process and is therefore a unique, let's say, historical and current resource, because he can help illuminate Canadians as to the intent of the people who were instrumental in drafting, writing, and agreeing on all of those fundamentally important accords. So let's start by talking about what concerns are driving you to re-enter the political discussion at the moment.
Well, primarily it is the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, especially those freedoms and rights that are in sections 2, 6, 7, and 15 of the Charter, which I helped craft. And they're freedoms of association, freedoms of expression, religion, conscience, freedom of assembly, freedom of association, that's in section 2. Section 6 is freedom of mobility, the right to travel anywhere in Canada or leave Canada. Section 6 deals with life, liberty, and the security of the person. And section 15... with equality. Every Canadian is equal before the law. As we sit here today, those provisions are being violated by all the governments of Canada, but in particular in my case right now, the federal government of Canada, and I'm about to launch a lawsuit against the federal government because of the mandates, especially their travel ban.
Take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? and that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs, but there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, this is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal, and this is the biggest story in the world right now, and of course it's unfolding even as we speak. Mitchell has noted in the chat that Give, Get, Go has already reached $4 million for the truckers, but the action at GoFundMe are so egregious, so wrongful. This is a case of outright theft. I believe they have done calamitous damage and that their stock will have fallen by 50% by midweek this. By Wednesday, I expect GoFundMe stock to have dropped by 50%. I'm very pleased to have with me Danny Siris with his extensive background in law enforcement to offer observations about what's taking place in Canada, where I believe I've sketched with a series of reports that I've presented here already today. Sufficient outline of the situation to make a reasonable and intelligent and informed commentary. Danny, welcome back to The Raw Deal.
Hello, sir. How are you today? Good to be with you.
Good, Danny. If you can increase your volume just a tad, that would be good.
How about now? Can you hear me?
Excellent. That's perfect. Danny, give us your sense of what's going on here and what I'm suggesting are outrageous, illegal, unconstitutional acts, not only by Justin Trudeau, but by the mayor of Ottawa and the law enforcement there. I thought it was most impressive that when they sent in the tow truck drivers to tow away the vehicles, instead they joined the protest.
I would agree, sir. I mean, in my opinion, what we're seeing is a complete meltdown of the Canadian government. I mean, not only do we have a fraud, I mean, think about it. There's a fake president, an imposter, pretending to be Trudeau in the Canadian government. I mean, that alone should say it all. Where is the real one? Is he hiding somewhere? Is he in New Zealand somewhere? I mean, who knows where he is at this time? You know, the fact that they would stoop this low, the government there, to do what they're trying to do to the truckers who have freedom, as that guy stated, it's just outrageous. You know, I know a guy that works for the Ottawa Police Department, and I've tried to reach out to him to see what his take is on what's going on. I have not heard back, no doubt, because of what's going on. But it is quite disgusting what they're doing and what's going on. if this is just another case of the government there showing the people the level of corruption that's been taking place and what's going on, and they're simply showing the world their cards on how corrupt they are, sir, to carry out this agenda, if you want to call it a depopulation agenda, of trying to force jab people, you know, which is obviously the data shows how many people are being injured and being killed daily by that vaccination. And now they're stooping to this level and sending in a police department to seize property that does not belong to them. It's absolutely outrageous, sir. I agree, the world is watching. And again, this is just another case of the elite showing their cards and showing how desperate they are to do what they're doing to carry out their agenda.
Danny, to me, it's so reminiscent of the prelude to the French Revolution where Marie Antoinette, when informed that the people had no bread, said arrogantly, well, then, let them eat cake. I mean, it's insulting. And to go send out the police to take their fuel and their propane so they're going to be freezing, to me, that is not just cruel and unusual punishment. That's sadistic. They're exercising their legal right to protest. You have the sole remaining living signatory to the Canadian Charter, which from everything I discern is even more explicit in designating rights to protest, freedom of assembly, freedom of speech, and the like to Canadians than is our Constitution via the First Amendment for Americans. They seem to have better defined basic rights of protest in peaceable assembly in Canada via their charter than we have here in the U.S. via the First Amendment to the Constitution. And here you have Justin Trudeau and this mayor of Ottawa. And frankly, Danny, I will not be surprised to see him strung up from a lamppost as mayor of Ottawa. He is such a traitor to the people of Canada. These actions are so despicable. I'm having a very tough time seeing how this can possibly be peacefully resolved. Your thoughts?
Well, you know, you can easily see, sir, why the Canadian government, like the U.S. government, has been busy trying to take away, certain types of guns from the people, limiting their magazine count, really cracking down lately, trying to come up with, you know, whatever they call their constitution there, trying to take their guns. It's really been a sad situation. But what I'd like to point out that I think everybody ought to pay attention to is the elite are pulling all the strings right now when it comes to law enforcement. Law enforcement, police in general, not so much the sheriff's department, but the police department is controlled by the city, and every single police officer, person that works for the police officer, gets their paycheck from the city, which is kind of ran by the mayor. And the funds come and trickle down through that government. And all what's going on now is these mayors that are in power, okay, they're illegally using their police to carry out these unconstitutional acts. I don't know exactly what you want to call it in Canada, but they're using their police illegally, sir. They're using them like a security force to carry out these hostile acts on the people, okay? And police are being forced to go along with this. And what I mean by that is police, in a way, have a gun to their head, the same that the people do when they try to tell you, you either take the jab or you're fired. Okay, and let me kind of elaborate. What I mean by that is you're controlled on that job by your paycheck and your pension, your retirement pension, which is usually quite large, and it's very substantial. And that's what most police and fire work towards. You know, at a certain point in their career, they can walk away. They continue with their salary for the rest of their lives. And that's one of the motivations for them doing that job, other than signing up to help people. But as they get older, they're always looking forward to their pension, okay? But what these oligarchs are doing is they're threatening these officers that are on the job and telling them that if they don't carry out their orders, no matter what they're told to do, that they will simply be fired. They will lose their paycheck, and they will demolish or pull their pension. And this is the gun to the head to all of the police. So they're using them. Now, we're seeing police quit around the country, okay, that have had enough. We're also seeing a lot of officers move to other states. We've seen a flux of officers move, say, from, as an example, from New York to Florida, where the governor there has actually offered them a signing bonus and some cash to help them move and get relocated to the state of Florida, where in Florida they're running it very constitutional. There's none of this stuff going on in the state of Florida. They're following the book, and it, people are quite happy there right now with the police and how they're taking care of their business. But I'll tell you what, this latest thing in Ottawa, to see the way this mayor is pulling the strings, the paycheck and pension strings, to order police to go in there like this and commit these egregious, what I would call, crimes of humanity, stealing their fuel. That's not even their role. That's not even their job. He's using them as an armed security force to go in there and steal the people's property. And this is really sort of an act of a civil war, if you ask me. And I'll tell you what, I certainly wouldn't want to work there as a police officer. I wouldn't want to face the public. I'm sure they are wearing masks, and it can't be a good time to be a policeman in Canada when they're carrying out these acts against the people. I mean, think about it. In reality, the police are using their firearms and they're pointing it at the people to carry out the forced vaxxed agenda by force, okay, using their firearms. And that is disgusting. And it's only a matter of time before a militia forms in Canada, in my opinion, and it goes the other direction. It's going to turn out to be very ugly in the end, sir. That's my opinion.
Well, that's my opinion as well, Danny, and I have no doubt that even though Canada undertook a gun confiscation program, that there is a vast number of hidden weapons that are going to surface now and going to be deployed against this tyrannical government. And I just encourage everyone, go back and read the preamble to the Declaration of Independence, which declares the right of every population to overthrow a tyrannical government when it ceases to benefit the people and operate in their best interest. There's no question about it that the Canadian government has become utterly tyrannical. This Justin Trudeau appears to be a complete weakling, a spineless wimp, just another stooge of the World Economic Forum and the Rothschild banking empire. This guy is, you know, despicable. It belongs on a 10 most wanted list for international criminals committing crimes against humanity. Danny, I think you've got it spot on. Elaborate more. It seems to me, you know, that the number of laws and rights of Canadians that are being violated here is enormous, and that sole remaining living signatory to the Canadian Charter seemed to me in the position to start enumerating all of them. He'd rattled off about 10 during that introductory portion of the clip. Your thoughts?
Well, I hadn't seen that clip before you posted it and showed it. But it was very interesting, and I can only wonder what a judge is going to say to the man that actually helped write it. That will be an interesting day in court, you know, if it ends up going to court. Lately, Canada has been very, very corrupt in what they're doing. But, you know, I would just like to call for everybody, sir, that, you know, we've seen nothing but, you know, gun control grabs from the Democrats, especially in the United States. And we've seen, you know, the massive gun control grabs have been going on in Canada, okay, and other countries. But what's really interesting is they're showing the world why the elite, if you will, are trying to take people's guns, because they've had this vax agenda on their mind and in their plan for quite a while. And they knew that there would be pushback against militias, okay, who are not going to go along with this sort of thing. And the people are armed and the police know this. But could you imagine if they were successful in Canada and there was no firearms allowed amongst the people whatsoever? Can you imagine what the police could get away with doing? They could go confiscate food. They can confiscate their gas. They can do all kinds of sorts of things, and the people would have no recourse whatsoever. And this is just yet another example of how important our Second Amendment is in our country, because it's another check or balance against the government should they ever decide to be tyrannical against the people. And I hope that all Canadians, and I'm sure they are, sir, have wide open eyes at this time. The whole world is watching this, and they can see the way the Ottawa police is being ordered to step out and do what they're doing against the people. To me, what they're doing right now is nothing more against, it can be construed nothing more as a crime against the people. It's disgusting. It's embarrassing to see the police partaking in this. And really, the police should just walk off their job. But the ones that are carrying this out, again, they're going to cite, I guarantee you, I was ordered to do it. And if I did not do it, I was going to be fired. I was going to lose my paycheck and my pension. Standard argument every single time. And I have no doubt, sir, that we're going to be hearing that argument from them in the near future.
I agree completely, Danny. I'm contemplating after the break playing more of that interview with the one remaining signator. I think that would be highly illuminating. Before we get to the break, however, and I make that transition, I would like to invite your contemplation of what GoFundMe has done to itself. Under the instruction or request of the mayor of Ottawa, they rescinded. They were stealing $10 million that had been donated to the trucker cause and declared they were going to distribute it to charities of their choosing. Danny, this was such an egregious, blatant act. In my opinion, they might as well have just pulled out a .45 and shot themselves in the head, corporately speaking, because they have committed an act of commercial suicide, in my judgment. Your thoughts?
Well, sir, let's back up and take a look at what GoFundMe has done in the past. There's numeral incidences of them confiscating or shutting down GoFundMes for anybody, you know, involved with the people. I mean, look at the, you know, it doesn't come to mind every single time they've done it because they've done it so many times. But anytime it's political for the left, they stand up for the left and the left's agenda every single time. And they're just showing people how corrupt and how controlled they are of an organization. I mean, I haven't trusted GoFundMe in well over 2 years based on their actions. And this is just another action of them showing the people what a corrupt organization. I mean, how can any company get away with stealing funds or redirecting funds when their charter is to collect it and then distribute it and then they make a fee? But now they're politically getting involved like they're a government and they're deciding who's worthy of those funds and who's not. That's not their role, sir. Their only role is to make sure that there's no any kind of it's not being used for drugs or any kind of a criminal act, something like that. But obviously for a donation for this kind of thing, there's no criminality involved with people donating to a trucker's organization whatsoever. They're just following a political whim. They're bowing to pressure. You know, it's hard to say who's pulling their strings, but we can all guess who's at the top that has influence on them and what they're using for their influence. And they're falling on their sword. It's very clear. I would never use GoFundMe for anything. And they're just, again, sir, clearly showing the world what a corrupt corporation they are, doing what they're doing and how they're following the left's agenda. And they're following this, not the mask mandate, but this whole movement when it comes to the coronavirus and the forced jabbing. This is just another corporation that's showing their cards to the people how corrupt they are, sir.
Well, Danny, I can confirm on my own personal experience how politically biased they are. Early on, when I was hit with this lawsuit, which falls into the category of a slap suit, a strategic lawsuit against public participation to punish anyone who raises issues in a court of law or elsewhere that the government finds to be inconvenient, contradicting official government narratives in this instant, by publishing the book, editing and publishing the book, Nobody Died at Sandy Hook, with 13 contributors, including 6 current or retired PhD professors, where we established that the school had been closed by 2008, that there were no students there, and that it was a 2-day FEMA drill, technically a mass casualty exercise involving children, where we even obtained the manual, which I included as Appendix A. You had Amazon.com then exercising its ability to censor by banning my book, even though it had been sold nearly 500 copies in less than a month, at which point I release it for free as a PDF to the public, because I've always been more concerned people learn the truth than the, I'm not interested in any benefit. As long as I have enough money to keep a roof over my head and food on the table, I could care less about money. But the fact is that so many were downloading the book, by one friend's estimate, 10 million times, that they felt they had to bring a lawsuit to fabricate a case against me so they could go after those who were allowing the book to be downloaded on the claim that the judge had determined that sentences in the book committed defamation and therefore they'd be guilty of the same offense, which they went about doing by a very contrived series of steps and maneuvers, which I've explained in many, many places, where I now have a petition for review before the Wisconsin Supreme Court for the egregious abuse of the law here, where the judge wouldn't even allow me to present all the evidence in the book on the ground that whether or not Sandy Hook was real had nothing to do with the truth or the accuracy of the death certificate in question, even though the death certificate in question states the decedent died at Sandy Hook Elementary School on 14 December 2012 from multiple gunshot wounds. I mean, have you heard of anything more absurd than a judge precluding all that massive evidence? So he only allowed me to present evidence about the death certificate per se, where I obtained the report of two different forensic document experts, both of whom concluded that the death certificate was fake. And nevertheless, the judge found me guilty of a defamation, even though truth is an absolute defense. Because I'm a media, because of the offenses occurred in a book and in chapters of a book and in another blog. I mean, it was obvious I was a journalist to begin with, but I have a vast experience, you know, thousands of interviews and blogs and all that. I laid it all out in a 7-page document before the oral hearing was held. And yet the judge never rendered the opinion that I was or was not a journalist, which required a finding. In fact, you cannot in general be liable without a finding of fault or negligence. But there was never any determination, no finding of fault or negligence, meaning this whole lawsuit, this whole case, as it was conducted in the circuit courts of Madison, Wisconsin, Dane County, was outrageous. A first-year law student would find it offensive and would know better. So, Danny, they're using all these corrupt techniques in Canada, clearly blatantly violating the rights of the citizens under the Charter of Canada, just as the Biden administration has been blatantly violating the rights of Americans under the Constitution, using OSHA, which does not have the authority to implement a mandate about our health. This is something that has never been the case, that OSHA could have that responsibility. I mean, the degree of corruption here is simply staggering. And I would add, what I think is so crystal clear about this case involving GoFundMe is everyone can see, it's right there staring you in the face, that this was a politically biased decision that completely discredits and incriminates GoFundMe. And as I say, even though under the threat of investigation by Ron DeSantis, and I'm confident that's going to go forward in the state of Florida, they reverse course. As they did in my case, they simply, I had a GoFundMe account and had accumulated a couple grand in support for my legal defense. GoFundMe simply shut it down and sent the money back. That's what they're doing now, but they've already discredited themselves. Danny, I do not see them surviving as a viable entity in the future.
Well, I would agree, sir. I mean, you know, to touch upon the Sandy Hook debacle, I think your book that you wrote, I just want to say, is going to end up being the long-term Bible on that subject. I mean, anybody that really wants to know what happened, all the facts are there. You know, I've read it. I know several people that have read it, and I hope there's a lot of people out there that will somehow try to obtain one of the copies that's floating around out there. But, yes, Amazon has showed their cards. You know, GoFundMe has shown their cards in many instances like this. Look at how many different funds they have shut down, you know, over time that the left does not agree with, whether it's legal fees or, you know, you name it. And the list is so long, it's pretty hard to keep up with it. You know, in your case, sir, with your trial, it was such a kangaroo sort of court that, you know, I believe you were, they sent in even a, sent in an actor that wouldn't really even ID himself in your case. But I'll tell you what, it's just, you know, at this point, what is that judge going to do someday with one of those Sandy Hook kids who we know is alive and well? We've seen the photographs of them, shows up to your court case and walks in and says, look, this whole thing was a hoax. You know, it's just way past time. They're trying to carry that whole false flag out with what they're doing. And, you know, GoFundMe is definitely, they're just part of this agenda of all these corporations doing this. I mean, Amazon is getting away with egregious censoring. They've been getting away with it for a long time. And they have, you know, sales monopolies that no other company in the world is seeing. And it's not fair to a lot of these other companies that Amazon's allowed to do what they're doing. But yet they get away with it. They're making billions and billions of dollars. And there's no doubt that the elite, the Democrat Party, and probably many other parties are profiting. They're getting some of that cash that's coming in from this thing, and that's why it's allowed to go on. That's why they're allowed to do the censoring that they're doing. You know, GoFundMe obviously is getting some kind of perks behind the scenes from the government to do what they're doing. Because why don't we have 50 types of GoFundMe companies out there? Why is it always just GoFundMe we have to rely on? There should be a lot of companies out there, but there isn't. So obviously they're running on some sort of a permission or charter they're getting from the elite. And part of the perks for doing that, for their business model, for them making all that profit they earn, is going along with this political leftist agenda when they get called into play, and they have no problem exercising that irregardless. They must obviously think the public is not watching. They're going to continue doing what they're doing, you know, and nobody's looking. Well, we are looking. And I'll tell you what, again, I haven't used GoFundMe in 2 years. I don't trust them, and I would never use GoFundMe for a project, and I certainly would never give a donation through GoFundMe. I would find another way around to get the money to the organization. There's no chance I would trust them. No way.
Well, this is going to prove to be a bonanza for Give, Get, Go, which, as Mitchell has observed, has already reached 4 million for truckers and is growing. I mean, by leaps and bounds, I have no doubt. Danny, we're about to hit the break, during which I'll move back to the interview with the only living signatory of the Canadian Charter, and we'll pick it up from there right after this break.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of a library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Torture us and bomb us. Fire is Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. The time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio. 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 Radio.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job? That Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, this is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal, with my special guest, Danny Sirus, once again, offering his perspective with his extensive background in law enforcement. We're returning to the video interview of the only living signatory to the Canadian Charter, which appears to be even more explicit in the rights it presents or grants to the Canadian people than is a First Amendment, for example, to the United States Constitution. And where it appears that the Trudeau government is grossly violating these. Now, I've enhanced the audio, so you'll be able to hear this a bit better. But we're going to go back and repeat that brief introduction and go forward about 15 minutes into the interview.
Mr. Peckford and I have been talking over the last week, as I mentioned, because he has serious concerns about the policies of the current Canadian government in relationship to the Canadian Charter of Rights, which was established as part of the Constitution Act in the 1980s. And he, as I said in the bio, is the only living minister who participated in that constitutional process and is therefore a unique, let's say, historical and current resource, because he can help illuminate Canadians as to the intent of the people who were instrumental in drafting, writing, and agreeing on all of those fundamentally important accords. So let's start by talking about what concerns are driving you to re-enter the political discussion at the moment.
Well, primarily it is the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, especially those freedoms and rights that are in sections 2, 6, 7, and 15 of the Charter, which I helped craft. And they're freedoms of association, freedoms of expression, religion, conscience, freedom of assembly, freedom of association, that's in section 2, section 6, freedom of mobility, the right to travel anywhere in Canada or leave Canada. Section 6 deals with life, liberty, and the security of the person. And section 15 with equality. Every Canadian is equal before the law. As we sit here today, those provisions are being violated by all the governments of Canada, but in particular in my case right now, the federal government of Canada, and I'm about to launch a lawsuit against the federal government because of these mandates, especially their travel ban.
So, I want to get this straight in my head. You were involved in the constitutional process cases.
Yes.
And that was relevant to the establishment of the Canadian Bill of Rights.
The Canadian Charter of Rights.
Sorry. Yes, let's get that right.
Bill of Rights was done in 1960 by John Diefenbaker and was incomplete.
Right, right. Okay.
That's why we needed the Charter of Rights in 1981-82.
Right. Okay. Well, we might want to cover that when we talk. I'm trying to juggle a lot of balls in my head right now because we want to be able to concentrate on the issue at hand, but we also want to bring along people who are listening into the entire process so they understand.
Yes.
And we kind of have to do this on the fly because we have like zero time. So, and we want to get it right. And so when you were working on the constitutional partition process, how was that associated directly with the establishment of the Canadian Charter of Rights?
Okay. It was all in the same bill called the Constitution Act of 1982.
Okay.
It's confusing because in 1981, when we finalized the deal in November, it was called the Patriation Agreement. But when it got put into legislation the next year, the words got changed because it's now going into legislation that we should highlight.
I'm leaping forward. Specific.
So I'm particularly on the lawsuit challenging the government's program of banning travel by train and plane by Canadians. In other words, we can't travel across our own nation. And the Section 6 says mobility, the right of every Canadian to travel anywhere in Canada or leave Canada. That's what the section says. And that's the exact words of Section 1. So therefore, that's what we are pursuing now in the courts in the next couple of days, in the next few weeks, and hopefully we'll get a decision. We're asking for an expedited decision in the next 3 or 4 months. So this will fundamentally challenge the approach that the federal government is taking on responding to this so-called pandemic. And therefore, we'll put into question this whole notion of using Section 1 of the Charter to override these rights and freedoms. If us as First Ministers, Dr. Peterson, had wanted to just have protecting rights and freedoms that could easily be changed, we wouldn't have gone to the Constitution. We would have just said,
right,
put an act in the federal parliament and put acts in all the parliaments, and then up to the whim of the political party at the time to change it. We wanted to safeguard it so that it was beyond the whim of political machinations, and therefore could not be changed only in the most extreme circumstances. So what we're really concerned about, and what I'm really concerned about, is if our charter is not upheld and then honored, and these freedoms and rights honored, then the next, and therefore we lose, the next time around when there's an emergency 2 or 3 years from now, or one, or the government decides and declares that there is an emergency, they can use this as a precedent, and the charter becomes further diluted, and then our rights and freedoms as individuals has been destroyed, and that section of being a democracy is no more. That is the great danger. So that's why it's very necessary for me to do what I'm doing. The other point about this is that 4 years after the charter came in, 1986, there was a case in the Supreme Court of Canada where the judges were forced to look at Section 1 because of the way the lawyer had constructed the case for his client. It was called the Oates test. And in that, the judges tried to describe what this Section 1 meant. And they did not a bad job, not as good as I thought they should do, but still a much better job. And it's really funny, the lower courts who have already looked at the charter as it relates to what's going on have not used this Oates test, which is highly unusual because courts always look to the precedent set by the highest court, Supreme Court, in determining what they will do in their case because we're both concerning the charter. And so the absence of seeing the Oates test being used in the lower courts so far is very troubling, and therefore the other reason why we must take this kind of action at this time.
Okay, so let me ask you a question about that, because this process of so circumventing Parliament and then failing to meet the proper standards for the kind of crisis that would involve lifting the provisions of the Canadian Charter of Rights, that should be blocked by the courts if they're abiding by the principle of common law, reliance on previous precedents, especially at higher court levels. But that's not happening. And so, and that's in the context that we discussed already, where the media, for example, has become co-opted or corrupted to a degree that it's no longer reliable. I've spoken with many lawyers in Canada in recent years who are very upset about the co-op and corruption of the entire legal enterprise for similar reasons. Are you even vaguely confident that the court system itself has enough integrity to give the views that you're putting forward, even though they're at the basis of the Constitution that unites us all? Do you think that your views can get any fairer or more equally impartial hearing in the court system than they have in the media?
Well, I think here's where I come down on that. The lower courts have made some decisions which are injurious to the charter, and they're being appealed to the higher courts. So I think here's where we have an opportunity. This particular lawsuit of mine will go to the Federal Court of Canada first, and then likely to the Supreme Court of Canada second, regardless of what decision is made, one side or the other will quite likely appeal it. So I think at the Court of Appeal in the provinces, that's the highest courts in the provinces, every single province has courts, a Supreme Court, and then a Court of Appeal. And Canadians are confused about that because when they hear these early decisions, they think that's the end of it. And that's only the beginning of it. To use a really good metaphor, Canadian metaphor, we're in the second period, halfway through the second period. We still got, perhaps half the game left, or almost half the game left. And that's where the courts of appeal come in, who usually are more independent and more sober thought as it relates to the jurisprudence, which is before them. And so this is where I am, and the lawyers, I think, come down and say, we have to exhaust all of the civilized legal processes that we set up under our Constitution. And that means these decisions will be appealed to the courts of appeal in the provinces, and then the Supreme Court of Canada. So it's these higher courts that have an unbelievable responsibility now, unelected judges, to finally decide whether, in fact, the democracy of Canada is going to survive or not, or whether suddenly, from 1867 to 1981-82, we didn't have a written charter, we get one, and now within 40 years it's being eviscerated or somehow undermined by an overreach of the various governments. That's our position, and we hope to put that to the judges, and hopefully that the judges will see it in that kind of reasoned, balanced way.
Okay.
Well, one wonders how much reason and balance the Canadian courts will provide here. Certainly the American courts have been pathetic. I thought it was useful, the parts we heard, where he was talking about issues related to the integrity of the courts, because frankly, I think we're in a similarly compromised position, well illustrated by the failure, the refusal of the Supreme Court to take up the Texas case, in relation to the election of 2020, where on behalf of the states of Pennsylvania, Georgia, Michigan, and Wisconsin, the case elaborated specifically how the selection of the electors had violated the state's own laws, and yet for the Supreme Court to turn it down on the basis of a lack of standing when this was an issue involving relation between the states was, in my opinion, the most grotesque abuse of the position of the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court and other members thereof in our history. Danny, and that's just reflecting what the enormity of what the Chief Justice did in rejecting standing in the Texas case. But I welcome your thoughts about any and all of the above.
Well, sir, just overall, very good video. It's very interesting to hear him go over the points from the guy that actually helped write the document. So I agree. We are seeing the same sort of things happen here in the U.S. The courts are being tested. And some of these unconstitutional rulings that they have made, and especially that Texas case that you cited when it comes to the 2020 election, they're currently showing the people, at these very important, crucial points in time when it's most needed for them to take action, is they're failing the people, okay? And it's really disgusting to see this. And when we see this, the public can clearly see the first thought in every American's mind that's walking down the street, that's at your local big box store today, taking care of their business or whether they're on their job, they're going to say, if you ask them, what do you think about our Supreme Court? They're going to say that it's going to be corrupt. They don't like what happened, and nobody agrees with what they're doing. We've seen Justice Roberts go away without much fanfare, which is very interesting in itself. But we have corruption in our courts, sir. I mean, yeah, they seem to go along on the smaller cases, but when it comes to the big ones that the left want, whether it's, gun control or especially on election fraud, when, the whole world knows what happened in 2020. We saw the biggest election fraud probably in the history of the world. And they let the people down. And it's quite disgusting to see the courts fall in line with the elites that are carrying out this vaxxed agenda when it comes to this. And, who knows what's going to happen in the future, but we do have a lot of corruption in our courts. And frankly, myself, sir, I don't trust any of these things to be placed into the hands of the Supreme Court. I don't trust the judges that are on there at the current time, or at least some of them, and I don't trust them to make a constitutional decision in favor of what's best with the public. They always seem to rule with the left when it comes down to it, or with the elite that are pushing this vax agenda.
Yeah, we'd like to believe that, Trump making the appointment of three presumably conservative jurors is going to restore some semblance of rationality and responsibility and constitutionality to the court that's entrusted with interpreting the meaning of the court and the legitimacy of laws and the propriety of cases brought before it. Here's an aside, by the way, Danny, that also happened in Canada. Man who rammed car into Winnipeg Freedom Convoy protesters, Antifa activist David Zegarak. On Saturday, several freedom protesters were injured by a vehicle that appeared to intentionally ram into a truck and run over at least one protester. I'm looking at a photograph of the guy on the ground. This is just outrageous. The masked man who ran over the Winnipeg Freedom Convoy protesters is an Antifa activist. This is a bit reminiscent of what happened in Charlottesville, where there was an alleged protest by someone who was supposed to run into a group of protesters there, but that was all staged. There were two different vehicles, two different drivers, two or even three different takes. I've exposed this many places. Let me remind people that among them is How to Spot a False Flag Part 1 and How to Spot a False Flag Part 2, which you can review if you go to my blog, jamesfetcher.org, and search for the blog entitled JimTheConspiracyGuy.com, the 65 shows. You'll have 65 shows that I produced last year on a wide range of subjects, including the pandemic, but included there is How to Spot a False Flag Part 1 and How to Spot a False Flag Part 2, where I discuss a dozen or more of these fake events and show how we know they're phony, fraud, fakery. I mean, it's just outrageous. Here's a capper, too, by the way. These various lawsuits against Alex Jones, for example, in Connecticut, the first named plaintiff is a woman by the name of Donna Soto, who's supposed to be the mother of one of the Sandy Hook teachers, Victoria Soto. Well, guess what? Down in Charlottesville, the car was supposed to have killed a woman named Heather Heyer, although Mona Alexis Presley has established Heather actually didn't die from the car accident. She died the following day as a heart attack and may have been completely independent and had nothing to do with it. The point I'm getting to is a woman, Susan Breaux, who claimed to be the mother of Heather Heyer, is the very same person who's Donna Soto in Sandy Hook. I mean, Danny, I'm telling you, it's so egregious. It's right in our face. It's right in our face. It's absurd. It's insulting. And I've yet to see law enforcement or the judicial system make an appropriate response to any of this, no matter how massive the evidence. And I've got this documented in a book about it. You know, books about Charlottesville, Parkland, Orlando and Dallas, Boston bombing, Sandy Hook temporarily unavailable because of an injunction by the judge that I'm not allowed to distribute the book because of the sentences involved there. And it's just beyond belief what's happened to our most basic rights here in the United States. Yours.
Well, sir, I couldn't agree more. I mean, you know, the courts have really let us down. I mean, they're just, again, they're showing the people over and over again the level of corruption. I mean, I'd like to point out, you touched upon Antifa. You know, I'd like everyone to think about this. You know, Antifa is allowed to burn things down. They're allowed to destroy property. They're allowed to violate the will of the people. And, you know, look what they did with Chaz or Chop in Seattle. They're allowed to do these egregious crimes, these property crimes, create damage, and yet we see the police stand around and do nothing. And if you notice, Antifa is always on the side of the radical left every single time. And anytime the radical left, which is basically the agenda of the globalists, is being carried out, they're allowed to get away with what they're doing, and the police do nothing. They just allow it to happen. They have to stand there because they have a gun to their head, paycheck and pension, the same story over and over again. And that alone, sir, should show the people the level of corruption that we have. To force the police to stand there and allow a rogue group of people, many of them ex-felons, as we know by the arrests that have been made. But then again, once they're arrested, we see these George Soros DAs that have been strategically elected and put into play around the country just simply don't file any charges. I mean, they create, sir, I mean, they commit, you know, egregious felony charges that any normal citizen walking down the street paying his taxes in this country would go to prison for, sir. They would lose their rights, lose their bank account, lose their home, lose their cars, lose their family, and they'd be sitting in a federal prison or, you know, a state prison somewhere for in the United States for creating these violent criminal acts. You're not allowed to burn and destroy someone's property. That's illegal, okay? You cannot commit acts of violence on somebody unjust like that. But yet again, we see these sponsored Antifa go around the country creating what I call state-sponsored terrorism for the left, and the police standing around doing nothing. But yet in Ottawa, we see the police confiscating the fuel of the truckers. I mean, think about it. But yet they do nothing about Antifa creating these egregious felony violent crimes against the people and property. Yeah. I mean, sir, we're so far gone when it comes to corruption. And I think some people just have their head buried in the sand. They're currently so focused on making and trying to earn their next dollar and keep their head down and keep food on the table, that they're just allowing this to continue. And I can only wonder how much longer we can partake in allowing this to continue in the U.S., sir.
And Danny, look how the Democrats were out there cheering them on. Kamala Harris cheering them on. Mad vaccine cheering them on. Nancy Pelosi cheering them on. Defunding the police. Has there ever been a dumber slogan in the history of American politics? That is what has led to this surge in crime today. Defunding the police. In New York, they defunded the police to the tune of $1 billion. $1 billion defunding the police in New York City. I mean, think about it. What in God's name were they thinking? They were deliberately participating in undermining the integrity of the United States, the ability to enforce the law, just as they've opened the floodgate to all these millions of migrants coming across the border, where Jim Jordan has observed that if the Republicans retake control of the House and the Senate in November, as I confidently predict will be the case, they're going to bring an impeachment issue against Joe Biden for not enforcing the migration laws, the border security of the United States, blatantly, blatantly. Danny, if you wanted to destroy the United States, well, how could you do a better job than taking out law enforcement, defunding the police, and opening the borders? Those seem to me to be essential elements in a master plan to destroy America, which we know is George Soros' dream before he dies. He wants to see his dream fulfilled.
Well, sir, that was well said. You know, the other part that you might want to bring out is the part that they're letting felons out of jail like we've never seen in mass, okay, particularly felons of color. And I'd like to point out just one city that I follow closely, the city of Los Angeles. Los Angeles is literally under siege by a criminal element or the felons. I'd like to really kind of elaborate on what I'm saying, okay? The criminal element in Los Angeles is literally allowed to rape, rob, and steal. I mean, the police are doing nothing there, okay? The police even put out a warning video a few months ago warning that the city of Los Angeles is too dangerous and they no longer can protect you or protect the citizen, and they told people don't go there. I've never seen a PSA, a public service message, by somebody in authority of a police department making a video like that. I've never seen that.
Danny, we're almost to the break, and I want to invite callers, but we'll continue this conversation as we proceed. The number 540-352-4452. 540-352-4452. Mitchell will handle your call. All we want is your first name and your state, and you can join the conversation. Danny, you're right. I was born in Pasadena, right outside of L.A., and then see L.A. turning into this absolute shambles, chaos, gang warfare, criminal prevailing. It's outrageous. We'll be right back after this break.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio, Radio.
Join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job, that Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Danny, I want you to continue to elaborate on the breakdown of law and order. And, of course, you're absolutely right. It's all these district attorneys whom George Soros has funded to reverse past practice to get away with eliminate bail on the ground that it's supposed to be racist, as we had here in Waukesha, leading to this driver plowing into a parade of citizens celebrating the 4th of July, and where we have out in L.A. and in San Francisco the declaration that they're not going to prosecute shoplifting up to 950. Just opening war on retailers and businessmen. I mean, if you wanted a recipe to destroy America, I think they hit on an ingenious one. I believe they collaborate with social scientists, demographers, social psychologists in mapping all this out, Danny. I think that no funds were left unexpended in mapping out a program to take down the United States, which is moving forward with great effect under a Democrat administration that part and parcel of the whole plan. Your thoughts?
Well, sir, there's obviously a war room somewhere or multiple where they're pulling the strings and they're doing these egregious events. But to go back what I was saying, you know, I'm in constant contact with a few attorneys down in Los Angeles, and I hear the stories behind the scenes of what's going on. They're literally, sir, not prosecuting felons for gun crimes. In other words, when a felon, particularly one of color, whether he be black or Hispanic, but mostly black, gets caught with a firearm, at most, sir, they take his firearm and then they release him back on the street to just go back. So they're signaling, sir, some people would call it virtual signaling. They're signaling that the felons are allowed to just rape, rob, and steal at will in the city of Los Angeles. They literally can walk down the street like the wild, wild west and shoot guns and do whatever they want. I just recently seen a shootout happening in a neighborhood in Los Angeles that was caught by a Ring doorbell camera, where just rival gangs are just down the street shooting at each other, bullets whizzing down the street, you know, and nobody thinks nothing of it. It's just normal activity. You know, in Oakland, California, I'd like to point out, sir, that black gang members in Oakland, and this might be a surprise to people because it's not really making the press. For a while, black gang members, for fun, sir, were getting on the overpasses, and they were firing guns into the passing traffic on the freeway for fun, sir, because they're bored. That's their fun. Go ahead and fire your weapon into a moving passenger car just because you have nothing else to do than terrorize the public. We've had several people shot while the commuting where the bullet came through the windshield. Recently, we had a six-year-old in the back seat of a woman's car. She was commuting with her child in the back seat. The bullet came through the window and killed her little six-year-old son sitting in a car seat in the back seat. No grieving press for that, no candlelight vigil, no nothing like that as she was passing through the city of Oakland. It's the most disgusting behavior, sir, that I've ever seen since I've ever been born. I mean, some of these acts are so egregious, it's terrible. Now, here's another big one, sir, that I sent you the other day. We just had a real, okay, I'd like to point that out, a real mass shooting. And why do I say that, sir? Well, we've pointed out, me and you so many times have pointed out these false flag shootings where we see the media all over it. We see CNN appears to be first on the scene with cameras in the parking lot, you know, cameras in the business, interviewing the witnesses before the police even get there. It's just ridiculous when we see these false flags. But yet we saw a real mass shooting. And what did we see? There was a black man that was hiding out in Northern California up by the border in one of the border towns. He got onto a bus. I believe it was a Greyhound bus. He was on his way back to Los Angeles. As he got on this bus, the bus made a stop. He got paranoid and somebody scared him on the bus. He pulled out a gun and started shooting the patrons on the bus. Several people were shot and one person was killed by this black man, sir, on a bus. Including a pregnant woman was hit by a bullet. He shot a pregnant woman with his gun. Okay, sir? He was let out of the jail on purpose, been in San Quentin, let out of jail by the Democrats to go out and create these egregious acts. We have these criminal element felons walking around with free rein to terrorize the public, and the district attorneys are doing nothing. They keep putting these people out on the street in Los Angeles. So this black man opened up, emptied his gun, and fired on the people in the bus. Of course, they're sardines. They have nowhere to go, okay? One was killed, several critical sent to the hospital, and they finally caught this guy on the run. Turns out he had a warrant. He was recently released felon from prison, and he went right back to doing what he knows what to do. He went out and got a gun. And he was out just committing crimes. They were already looking for him. And he, you know, these felons, sir, they get in their head psychologically that they have no concern for human life. They have no concern for themselves and they have no concern for anybody else. And when they're walking around on the street with guns, sir, they're nothing more than when you let wild animals out of the zoo, lions and tigers, and you drop them off on downtown Market Street to hunt and take, you know, whatever they want to take. That is absolutely what is going on. And they're sending this message every single day, sir, to these people that they have free rein to shoot people on the freeway. They can shoot down on them in their cars for fun. You can go ahead and board a bus and shoot whoever you want. It's absolutely horrendous what's happening in these Democrat-controlled states, sir. We are far out of control, and the police are ordered to stand down and allow these criminals to operate. That is the most nastiest thing I can possibly think about. This is nothing more than another part of their depopulation, like the vaccine. They're literally using criminals, in my opinion, sir, to depopulate and terrorize people into doing what they want. It is disgusting, sir. And I think sometime we should do a detailed report on this latest shooting that just happened in Northern California. It was horrendous.
Well, we got Paul standing by, but before we bring him in, I want to mention that China is putting pressure on Joe Biden to sign the UN Small Arms Treaty, and it appears as though that would have the devastating effect of vitiating our rights under the Second Amendment. I have no doubt that Biden, who is just a stooge, I mean, this is literally a sock puppet. This isn't even a person with a functioning brain. This is someone who might as well be on strings for all he's doing. All Biden has to do is to sign back onto the treaty and let communist China take the reins in the global gun control scheme designed to ultimately bring the U.S. to its knees and disarm Americans. Paul, I'm glad you're here. Join the conversation.
Yeah, I just had to call because I love the characterization of just like letting animals out of the zoo. Danny, you're skirting the line there. Gotta be careful here. I'll just mention again, I know I've done this on the air probably years ago and probably more than one show, but I talked about a video or documentary called The Great Jailbreak. G. Edward Griffin did it, and I believe it was back in either the early 70s or possibly the late 60s, but essentially this is a thing for a very, very long time. They know that a very small core group, very small percentage of criminals commit the vast majority of crimes. And so to keep the numbers up, to keep the, you know, pad the crime statistics and increase the need for, you know, funding and police and so forth, there's the revolving door. I mean, it's no accident when you see these news stories about all these people had a lengthy record. You know, it's obviously by design, and it just goes back to, you know, my main theme that I've mentioned before about when you allow Jews to run your society and to have control, there is no limit to the amount of ruin that they will bring to you. And that's all this is it's at this point, I can only see things the way I see them. I see it as essentially a war being waged upon us. They've made it clear that they want us dead, that they want to hurt us, they want to harm us. They want us to obey them, right? They give us the illusion of a government that's supposed to serve us, right? The government's supposed to obey us, our will, but it's the opposite, okay? We don't get to have them obey us or follow our orders. We're supposed to follow their orders, and we're supposed to essentially just inject ourselves and die. So that was my take before on the whole truckers thing. I'm obviously in favor of any movement that builds popular support, but these guys got to know we're dealing with murderers, okay? Long-term planned murderers, and there's only one way to deal with murderers in the end. And so if the truckers run some people over, now we got something going.
As has been observed, when the people fear the government, you have tyranny. And when the government fears the people, you have freedom, or at least some closer facsimile thereof. A point I'd make about releasing all these felons, it's a huge matter of time, expense, man hours to track down criminals. You got to arrest them. You got to indict them. You got to marshal the evidence. You got to take them to court. You got to get them convicted. And then you got to get them imprisoned. And for these DAs, just unload. I mean, each one they put back out on the street represents, I'm sure, at an absolute minimum, $100,000 of wasted taxpayer money, not to mention the time and money spent on their incarceration. Danny, would you not agree? I mean, this is an egregious insult to the American people.
Well, sir, there's an agenda obviously being carried out. You forgot to mention the hundreds of thousands of dollars in property damage that they're causing, not to mention the loss of life. What is that worth? Okay. You know, each felon that they let out of jail kills a certain amount of people before they're either put down forever or they're put back in prison. And it's a revolving door. And they're using them, sir, as like a social weapon. Okay, it's obvious. I mean, you ask any cop in private, what do you think about these felons that are roaming the street, especially down in Southern California? It's so grotesque, sir, that you have these rapists, these former violent crime people let out of jail for gang activity, robbery, drugs, and they're roaming the streets with knives and guns. You can't go downtown Los Angeles; it's too dangerous. The homeless people. Well, you know, recently, sir, within maybe a week or two, there was a nurse coming home from the hospital. She was 60 years old, 35 years of critical care training she had, okay? And she was brutally assaulted at a bus stop by a black homeless man who turned out to be an ex-felon that wanted her juice that she was drinking on the way home. He bashed her head on the sidewalk, sir, and killed her. Where's the candlelight vigil for her? Why was he on the streets? Again, this is by design. Who knows how many people he killed and what's going on? The only thing the story would say is the suspect was in custody. And when I looked at it in depth, I found the guy's photo and I found out he was black. But of course, at first they tried to hide that. As a matter of fact, that mass shooting I just told you about that was real, okay, that just happened in Northern California on the bus, okay, the local media up there covered it. But the media down to the south, where all the Democrats control, all would not say anything about the suspect. As a matter of fact, they went out of their way to try and hide the picture, the photo, the identity of the suspect, and even went as far to say there was no description of the suspect when they full knew who did it, who he was, and who his background was. So they're constantly hiding the identity of the criminals as well. And I just see it happening, not only in California, sir. I see it happening all over the United States. And the police could end this. You know, their phrase that they pushed, the Democrats pushed, is, well, you can't arrest your way out of this problem. Well, you know, we have two ways of dealing with crime, sir, and there's really only two ways, okay? Either you eliminate the threat forever, that means that they're killed, the felons, or they're locked up for life. Those are the only two choices, sir. After that, the third choice is that you allow them to walk the streets and continually victimize the public, okay? Once a person, you know, we used to have three strikes in California. Pete Wilson put that in. And, you know, back in the day when it was enforced, it used to put the fear of God back in my day into these felons. Because we just look at them and say, you know what, you got two strikes, you know what? Third one meant one more, sir, and they were gone for life. They were never getting out. They were never going to see the sun again. And I'll tell you what, that kept a lot of criminals in check. Crime in California plummeted. That was a brilliant thing that was put in. And now they don't enforce it anymore. And the felons know it. And they're not only that, they're letting them out of prison. People that are convicted of these life convictions, they're letting them out of prison, these violent crimes. The first thing they do is they go to the gang cities like Oakland. I'm using it as an example, or Compton, or many of the other cities around the country, Baltimore, you can name, Detroit, and they get a gun. The first thing they do is they get a firearm. That's their claws. That's why I use the animal out of the zoo. They get their claws back, which is a firearm. And then the first thing they do is start victimizing people, like we just saw in Northern California. Can you imagine? He thought somebody was going to turn him in. He pulled out a gun on a bus. And how could he have been threatened on a bus by a bunch of innocent people, including why would he shoot a pregnant woman? And what could possibly, it shows you the diseased mind of a felon, that he would pull out a gun on a crowded bus with no police around because he's paranoid and shoot a pregnant woman. That is the most disgusting act I could possibly think of, sir. And yet they knew when they let this guy out of jail that he was going to commit these crimes, and he went out and did this very thing. We have hundreds of thousands of these people, these animals I call, walking the street in society every day. Felons do not mix with law-abiding citizens, sir. They never have, and they never will, okay? They're not going to be hired for a job. Nobody's going to give a violent convicted felon a job around law-abiding citizens. Can you imagine having a legitimate business with employees that work hard and you invite a convicted felon? You're not going to see Google hiring some guy that was convicted of bank robbery or he shot somebody. You're not going to see that. You're not going to see Facebook hiring anybody. There's nobody like that working at Facebook. They can't get jobs, okay? Their IQs are too low. They don't have any resources. You don't see them going to school and even trying to better themselves. They're not trying to start a business of any sort, okay? They're just going out. It's very rare you see a story of any of these violent felons coming back and trying to get a job. They immediately get busted back over and over in the revolving door, over and over and over. Now, I saw a video the other day, a patrol video, where a felon just got out of jail. He's a career criminal. He happened to be black. He's been in jail his whole entire life. He went the opposite way of the jail into a bedroom community, and he was still wearing his jail shirt when he got stopped by a deputy in a high-end neighborhood in Northern California. And he was looking for something to steal. He had no business being in that neighborhood. He hiked up the hill. He was going in the complete opposite direction of Oakland when they called the police on him and the deputy questioned him. I watched the whole interview. The guy had no answers why he was in the neighborhood. And ultimately, he just said, I guess I got turned around. He didn't get turned around. Okay. He was looking to steal, and he got caught literally, sir, within 30 minutes of being released from prison. It was absolutely disgusting. They didn't arrest him, which I have no idea why they didn't arrest him. They sent him on his way and just kicked him out of the neighborhood. But again, we see these people walking down the street every single day, and they, you know, the fact that the Democrats are getting away with this, sir, I don't know what this is going to lead to, but they are definitely trying to destroy our society by releasing these violent felons on the street, and it's causing mass chaos, property damage, and it's taking people's lives, sir. It's disgusting.
And that leads me to a question for Paul, who commonly suggests that the Democrats and the Republicans don't have a significant difference between them. Paul, in relation to law enforcement, funding or defunding the police, letting felons out of jail and all this nonsense, don't you see a clear difference here between the two parties that you could acknowledge and endorse?
Well, sure, there's an affinity for, you know, certain types of people, right? In other words, basically, white men with any brains are going to be on one side, and then, you know, weak-willed do-gooders, women and minorities are going to be essentially on the other side. So, you know, they're going to be attracted to the whole victim mythology, right? In other words, these people are just victims. Well, sure, they're victims of biology. You know, they're victims of just life circumstances. I mean, the absurd notion that there's not just equality, but even equality of opportunity. No, there's not equality of opportunity. I'm sorry. That's just not the way the world works, okay? I don't have 145 IQ, all right? My opportunities are limited by such things as that, right? I mean, we all know that intelligent, good-looking people, and they even used to say tall people in general were more successful than shorter people. They had studies on this sort of thing. So the bottom line is that this is in the agenda overall is a Jewish agenda. It's not a Democratic agenda. It's a Jewish agenda.
I'm just trying to nail you down on what I think is an obvious difference.
Yeah, I know what you're
the
trying
parties
to do.
You don't, you can't be candid and say, yes, there is that difference between them, rather than trying to give me a lot of stuff about why there isn't really a difference between them. In my opinion, this is a real difference between the parties. Anyone who votes Democrat in the future has their head where the sun does not shine. And this is a bottom line issue where I think that you have to vote for the Constitution, law and order, the law enforcement, civil rights, but with the Republicans. I think this is a really
I get all of that. I was trying to articulate the position. I don't think it's a distinction worth making, though, because there's an underlying issue that I've made clear. And you have to be clear on it. I can recommend the books if you want to read them. I can recommend the sites if you want to listen to them. You haven't listened to 10 minutes of Dr. Pierce, right? I've got 100 hours into Dr. Pierce, okay? You haven't read David Duke's book, Jewish Supremacism, or My Awakening. I would suggest you read those. Those are the basic foundation. And then you can read National Socialist literature back in the 20s and the
30s. We all know what it is we're looking for. We all know your endless rants about Jews controlling the world, and I frankly agree with a whole lot of it because of the role of Israel, Netanyahu, the Rothschild. I'm asking you about a difference between the parties, which appears to me a clear bona fide difference, and I don't want to – the other stuff is separate. Okay, good. Thanks. Danny, would you not
– recognize the difference.
Thank you. Good. Very good, Paul. Danny, would you not agree that this is a serious real difference between the parties?
Well, there seems rhetoric, sir, and how they speak and what they propose. Behind the scenes, you know, I'm not sure. I'm not in there, and I can't talk to them. I'll tell you what, I sure would like to travel around the country and talk to a few key Republicans, especially like Rand Paul. Would I love to sit around and have a cup of coffee with him and pick his brain on what he thinks and what he actually knows about what's going on. You know, if I were ever to bring my tablet or my laptop and get a meeting with one of those politicians or in private, and I could show pictures and videos and stuff, I could quickly find out what the state of that person is by his comments based on a few proofs that I would show him right in his face. you know, including these shootings that we're having around the country and these crimes being committed by these felons. Now, of course, I don't mean to spend too much on this, sir, and rant and rave on this, but I'm telling you, this is a major problem, okay, with these felons walking down the street.
Danny, we agree with that. You've made the point beautifully. Paul, do you think what the Trumpers are doing in Canada is going to be an inspiration for the world? Do you think it could precipitate a revolution all of the French? I mean, I believe it has that potential. Your thoughts?
Well, sure. I think it's a great thing. And to be honest with you, it is already having an effect on a lot of people everywhere. And I'm assuming almost it's almost all positive. But I just think that it has to be borne in mind that you have to just go further. In other words, the mandates are illegal anyway. You don't have to obey a mandate. Okay. It's not like they're saying we need to repeal the laws. You know, so basically what they're really asking for is the government to stop trying to illegally tell them what to do.
Yes.
That's fine. But again, I'll go back to my point about these are murderers. They're trying to murder us. And just quickly, I want to mention, I just watched a video just the other day about a guy in France, right? Is made by a Frenchman and with English subtitles. And talking about the same.
Paul, go ahead.
Right? If you don't want to have your country flooded with illegal non-white immigrants, you're a racist. If you don't want the black man to have equal opportunity, you're a racist. It's the same crap they're pulling there, and he named the Jew, just like going on in here, just like so many other countries. It's like a formula that they're applying.
Paul. Look, I appreciate it. I thought this was a good call. I'm glad you called in. Danny, I'd like you to have a final word about Toronto and what it means.
Well, sir, I'm sure glad that you played that interview with the guy that helped write their constitution. And I do believe that this thing that's happening with the truckers could catch on worldwide. I'm glad to see it, frankly, and to see the police come out and do what they're doing, showing the world their corruption. Showing the world that the police will use them as soldiers to carry out their political agenda and regardless of the law, I think is a good thing. I wish the truckers well. I think they're all heroes for standing up for what they're doing, sir. And I hope this continues, and I hope they will finally give up on their vaccine agenda and say enough is enough, and we get on to the trials, number two, whatever you want to call it, and we put all these people behind prison or worse. That are behind all the jabs and for all the crimes against humanity they've committed. But I think it's a good thing that's going on with those truckers. Some of these things that they're pulling off is just horrendous.
Thank you, Danny. Thank you, Paul. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Back on Wednesday with the event.
Radio. Como va? This is Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. I pulled some strings and gotten you front row seats to my new show, The Perfect Triangle. Live Friday, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Revolution Radio Studio A. The Perfect Triangle is equilateral, three sides of the same length. In an angry, bipolar world, three perfect sides reveal many truths.
Body, mind, and spirit.
Thought, word, and deed.
Conspiracy, propaganda, and truth.
Natural health, allopathic tyranny, and your body.
Freedom, globalism, and sovereign nations.
And so much more. Each week, the Perfect Triangle will blast through fake news lies, champion the natural way and natural law. Unravel the Orwellian deceptions of our corrupt government. Reveal the satanic evil of globalist banks and transnational corporations. Tune in every Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern, to Revolution Radio Studio A for thoughtful discussions with free thinkers. Your calls are always welcome. The Perfect Triangle, with Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. Join me, won't you?
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict. But